Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But we ask you to hold your calls for the time being. We have with us Dr. David Gesselquist, and Dr. Gesselquist, I've wanted to have on our programs for a long period of time since I read about some articles he'd written and meetings he'd attended where he challenged what most people believe about the AIDS epidemic, and that it is primarily sexually transmitted. Now, as you know, I've had a great deal of interest in the AIDS epidemic because we've refused at every turn to use the standard and effective public health measures that were readily available in this country to bring this epidemic under control. But Dr. Gesselquist was working in Africa and studying the reports that were coming in from over there, and he came up with the impression that we're not being told the truth, that a significant number of AIDS cases are not sexually transmitted. So with that as a background, Dr. Gesselquist, thank you so much for being with us again.
Thank you. It's good to be with you.
All right, fine. Now, this is an entirely different audience, so you can feel free to repeat what you've said before, and what you said before was right on, and nobody's going to have heard it before. So why don't you tell our listeners just a little bit about who you are, how you happened to, prepare these reports, and really how you became aware of the fact that many of the people who in Africa who have the disease didn't get it from sexual transmission.
Well, my background is as an anthropologist and an economist. I've lived in Thailand for several years and in Bangladesh for 10 years. During the 80s, and then I've also traveled quite a bit and worked short-term in Africa from 1995. One of the things that's consistently aware of is that there's an awful lot of unsterile healthcare around. And as the discussions of and the plans for how to address the HIV epidemic in Africa went forward, I just was thoroughly frustrated for years to see this risk not being addressed. We know that HIV goes very efficiently through the IV drug community. So why wouldn't it go through healthcare? So from several years ago, with some co-authors, we started to look through the literature that had been accumulated to date, all the studies on that have looked at what are the risks for HIV in Africa. And what we found, surprised even us, and that is that the evidence was there that showed a stronger link between HIV and healthcare exposures. That is, people that had injections had more HIV. Women that were in antenatal care and postpartum seemed to have very high incidence of HIV. Blood for transfusion still wasn't being systematically tested, and that was a risk. So there, and then if we looked on the other side, looked at the evidence for HIV transmission through sex, for sure there was transmission through sex, but the estimate that this accounted for 90% or more of HIV in African adults just wasn't borne out by the evidence. There's a number of studies that show what's going on in that area.
All right, I'm going to have to interrupt you there for just a moment as we begin to bring some of our other stations on board here. We'll be right back with Dr. David Gesselquist going into the background of AIDS in Africa. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay. Our guest this afternoon is Dr. David Gissel-Quist, who is a consultant, who's, of course, lived throughout the world. But in recent years, he's been increasingly concerned about what most people believe, what most healthcare providers believe, what most politicians believe about the primary means of spread of AIDS, at least in Africa. And so he set out with other authors to begin to review all of the literature that was available. And, of course, one of the means by which this disease is spread is from mothers to children. You would expect there's certainly a great deal of blood contact, and the child passes through the birth canal and certainly through possibly spread through the placenta, but probably through the birth canal. And so, we've always assumed that the children who were HIV positive had HIV positive mothers. But what did you find out, Dr. Gissel-Quist, when you began evaluating how many of these children who had HIV didn't have HIV positive mothers?
Well, this is where this is one of the strongest and most irrefutable evidences for HIV transmission through healthcare. Some of the early studies, one early study in 1985, for example, in Kinshasa, Zaire at that time, found that of children with HIV, 39% of them had HIV negative mothers. And around the same time, another study in Kigali in Rwanda found that of children with HIV, 20% of them had HIV negative mothers. And they looked at some of them had been transfused, and so you could assume that some of the infections came from blood, but in many cases the children, the only exposures that were reasonable could reasonably explain what you saw was injections.
In other words, vaccinations or other things that were done to them medically spreading the disease. Now, is there any basis for this? Is there any situation throughout the world where other diseases have been spread by needle injections?
Oh, absolutely. There in Africa at that time, they didn't follow up with any investigations. But in 1988, doctors in Elista, Russia, found one child with HIV and an HIV negative mother, and they set in motion an investigation that tested tens of thousands of children and mothers in the region, and found what they found is that 250 children had been infected with HIV from one child that had come into the hospital in 1988 with HIV from its mother, and this happened in 1988 through early 1999, and once the investigation was there, of course, they stopped it.
Dr. Gissel-Quist has been talking about, of course, in Russia, it was found that there were large numbers of children, several hundred children, had HIV disease, and it was all traced back to the fact that these children had been in the hospital and that they had actually all been infected by one child back about 1988. And, of course, these children then were in the hospital, and whether they were given injections or whether they were given transfusions. How was this really done? Was it just done with dirty needles and dirty syringes?
Well, in the Russian outbreak, they looked very closely at what possible procedures people might have had that would have shared the same equipment or the same medicine, and in many cases it seemed to be intravenous infusions, that there was something about the way the lines were shared or not cleaned or something that spread it very efficiently. But in some cases, the only thing that seemed to be shared was a syringe for intramuscular injections.
And so they used the syringe over and over again.
Oh yes. There's the best recent estimates from the World Bank. I mean from WHO for the latest year 2000 is that there were 16 billion injections in the world in middle and low income countries. And of these 16 billion, almost 7 billion were injections with reused syringes or needles without sterilization.
Well, of course, here in the United States, we have disposable needles and disposable syringes. And what does a syringe cost? 7 or 8 cents, something like that?
A
penny or so. And so we simply dispose of them. Over there, they use them over and over again, and then we see, of course, all sorts of complications. Have you looked at all into the hepatitis C epidemic that has swept the world, that many people believe is referable to vaccinations?
Oh, absolutely, and I mean, Africa has the highest estimated rates of hepatitis B and C as well.
You're really talking about millions and millions and millions of people involved, aren't you?
Oh yeah, yes. There's I think with hepatitis C, I think we're up to 300 million or something on the world scale, and hepatitis B carriers is comparable.
Of 300 million people with hepatitis C throughout the world, and it's felt that most of this has come from needle injections. Would that be a fair statement?
Oh, absolutely, yes. Or needles and other blood exposures in healthcare or in IV drug use in some of the big cities.
And so we have a real problem, but we seem to ignore this as a factor in the spread of HIV in Africa, and maybe, of course, at least in certain circumstances, we're pursuing the wrong approach. So now, of course, what about many of the heterosexuals? We heard that most of the disease is spread heterosexually in Africa, but are there people there that have contracted the disease that did not get it from heterosexual contact?
Oh, the heterosexual contact proceeds in Africa as it does here, but it's not fast enough to make the epidemic grow by itself. If that were the only thing that was going on, the epidemic would die out, but the numbers get jacked up by other kinds of transmission. Now, in some very close studies, for example, they'll estimate that the transmission heterosexually is 1 per 1,000 contacts. In a number of studies in Africa, they've looked at couples where one has HIV and the other one doesn't, and they're living together, and maybe they're not even aware they have HIV, or in any case, they continue unprotected sex, and the transmission is about is under 10. Per 100 person years. That means 10 out of 100 couples that were discordant at the beginning of the year, only 10 become infected over the year.
All right, fine. Now, then, of course, you seem to see countries like Botswana, very, very high level of medical care, a very prosperous country. And yet, of course, we seem to see much higher levels of the disease there, where there's all this medical support than we do in many of the other countries. What's this all about?
Well, that should be exactly. I mean, that's something that we need to look at. And it's disturbing that we don't have, despite the research and attention to Botswana, we don't have a piece of paper that shows us that anyone's looked into the healthcare risks. You can compare Botswana now. In Botswana, women in antenatal care by 25 to 30 or so are 50% HIV positive. This is just across the board. It's an obscene figure. And if you go to Sierra Leone, where they've been in a brutal civil war, where healthcare has pretty much collapsed in the countryside from during the 1990s, you just couldn't get in there to do anything. By 2002, when the war ended and the CDC was able to go in and do some estimates, they found that HIV prevalence in rural adults was under 1%.
All right, so here you have one country with a very high level of medical care and all sorts of shots being given, and all this medical care. You've got between 40 and 50% of the people infected, and in Sierra Leone, where there's been rapes and really a horrible, horrible situation, and certainly no prophylaxis at all, you got 1%. What's wrong with this picture? I mean, you would think that figures like that would make everybody stop and take a look at what's happening.
Yeah, I can't understand why people don't don't react to that kind of information. You have the same thing happening in Mozambique, that as long as the war was on up until 1992, there was very low HIV in the country, and the HIV rates took off almost as soon as the war ended in 1992.
Well, of course, having practiced and lived in South Africa for some time, of course, it was in the mid-1970s, but I can attest to the overall quality of the healthcare delivery, at least during the years I was there. But now, of course, South Africa has one of the highest levels uniformly in Africa, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
Yeah, what levels are we talking about?
They're variously reported around 20%. 17 to 20% in adults, sometimes over 20%, yes.
All right, fine. So we see this in a society that has all sorts of immunizations and vaccinations. Now, do you attribute this, or do you think that this is vaccinations? What do you attribute this to?
The vaccinations account for only about 5% of the injections. So that's not many other injections are. Most of it would be through other kinds of injections. But vaccinations are dangerous because you've got multi-dose vials, so that the HIV can come from one person, go into the vial, and then be used on multiple other people. I'd be afraid of particularly of what kinds of exposures women are having in antenatal care. Typically, they get venous blood drawn for syphilis tests, and the drawing venous blood is particularly dangerous procedure if the equipment is not sterile. They also get several doses of tetanus vaccine from multi-dose vials, and again, if they're not scrupulously careful about the equipment, that can be very dangerous. I'd also be very afraid of treatment for STD in STD clinics, because you have people coming back for repeated treatments. And they can bring back high viral loads with primary infections and be very dangerous for passing the disease on.
But it really seems that what your findings are, as you've analyzed all this, is that the more medical care, the more disease, more HIV; the less medical care, the less HIV.
Well, there are countries in Africa where they have better healthcare systems and they don't have a lot of HIV. So. It may be that in some countries the systems are for sure safer.
Now, what countries would those be?
Senegal, for example.
All right.
Another country, if you go into Asia, you look at Thailand. Thailand is noted for having a generalized HIV epidemic, but in that country you have higher rates in the rural areas. Than you have in the remote rural area than you have in the cities, which I think might possibly be explained by having safer health care in the cities than in the rural areas.
And, of course, they've had a great program there for a long time, trying to make people act more responsibly, too.
Yes, they did.
All right, fine. Well, now, of course, you've presented your findings to the Royal Institute over in London and elsewhere. What is the general reception as you begin challenging what most people and most medical professionals feel about the primary means of spreading this disease?
Well, we get mixed results. From the a number of journals have published our papers and are encouraged debate, and we're also getting a lot of support from Africans or people who have experience as missionaries in Africa who are very aware of their problems. On the other hand, we're getting a lot of resistance, particularly from WHO AIDS, from UNAIDS. Experts and from NIH and from CDC in the U.S., people who are sort of have been responsible for coordinating the prevention messages and the programs to now. We're having trouble with them.
All right, fine. And of course, I've read some of the reports that have come out, say from the Royal Society and elsewhere. But at least you've been there, you've presented it, your material was accepted. But it's very, very hard, I think, when you've always believed something, suddenly have somebody come along and say, hey, you're wrong, this is what it's really going on. And then Semmelweis, other people have tried to do this through the years and have met resistance. You just have to go with it, what the science begins to show you. So are you continuing to work on this issue?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and we still have more things to write about, and also trying to get the messages to the into different to the public. There's also ongoing research in Africa now that might bring out what's going on, and I think maybe that will be what will break things open.
All right, fine. We're going to be back here in just a moment with Dr. Gesselquist, and we're going to be talking more about his theories that there may well be other primary means of spreading this disease than we've been told.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever wondered about the boys we left behind in Vietnam, in Korea? Did you ever know that we left 25,000 American boys behind in Russia, in Siberia, at the end of the Second World War? Have you ever wondered what really happened at Oklahoma City, what really happened with the TWA 800 that went down off the eastern coast about a year ago? Well, ladies and gentlemen, all of the subjects are well covered in a fascinating book by Craig Roberts entitled The Medusa File. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, order The Medusa File. Actually, Craig Roberts was a police officer working on the Oklahoma City bombing. Now, this book has been suppressed very effectively across America, and it's self-published, but I promise you that there's no other book I know that'll give you more contemporary history, frightening history that every American needs to know. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR now.
This is health journalist Bill Sardi. A secret of healthy aging was recently found among people who have lived unusually long, healthy lives. The longest-lived woman, Jean Calment of France, who lived 122 years, and man, Antonio Todd of the Italian Isle of Sardinia, who lived 115 years, as well as the Queen Mother of England, who lived 100 years, outliving one of her daughters by 3 decades, was their daily consumption of red wine. But health authorities have been reticent to recommend an alcoholic beverage to the public at large until now. Longevinex is the world's first stabilized French red wine extract in a pill, without the calories and without the alcohol or sulfite preservatives. One Longevinex capsule provides the red wine molecules found in 5 glasses of the best red wine. Call 866-405-4000 to order Longevinex. It's a revolutionary dietary supplement. 866-405-4000. 4,000.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Thierry. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious-tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763. Or online at healthyfoundations.net.
Okay, well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and I just wanted to tell you about some of the items that we carry, and certainly one of them would be the Phonopoly. It's a program that's designed to teach children and adults, too, how to read and spell and pronounce words phonetically. And for so many of the young people who've gone to our government schools, they really cannot spell, and they can't spell because they don't know phonics. Phonopoly will teach them the technique. In about 16 hours, you can undo all the harm that has been done in the past, and children then can begin to sound the words out, and they can do it efficiently. So if you'd like to get a Phonopoly set, they're available through Radio Liberty. Most of these are $300, $400, $500, $600. This one's $139.95. It's played like Monopoly. It's a fun game. I played it myself. And you'll learn the 40 sounds and the 12 basic rules of the English language. Give us a call, 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Well, Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Dr. David Gesselquist, and we're talking about his findings as he and his associates have analyzed the medical literature and found the amazing fact that here you have HIV-positive children in Africa. In one study, almost 40% of them, the mothers weren't HIV-positive. In other studies, 20% of the mothers weren't HIV-positive. And increasing evidence to suggest that there are other factors here responsible for this terrible epidemic that is really decimating Africa today. Well, now, of course, we've seen something quite similar to this in China, haven't we? Certainly there was almost no AIDS in China until just a relatively few years ago. Would you like to get into that incredible story?
Well, China has, their AIDS has been coming from two ways. One is from the IV drug use that's been coming up from the south, but the other occurred, the other major contributor to the outbreak occurred during the 1990s when the government of China at that time, 1993, the minister encouraged export of blood products, and a number of companies closely linked to the government were organizing peasants in poor areas to sell their plasma to the government, and the government would send out agents and collect the plasma. Since they were collecting plasma, not blood, the people could contribute, could sell more often. And within a few years, the government became aware that just hundreds of thousands of these plasma sellers were contracting HIV, and they tried to stop it in 95, but by some accounts it has continued for some years. Now the estimates are that as many as a million Chinese peasants have contracted HIV from plasma selling.
The amazing thing about this story is that apparently after the blood was taken and they took the plasma out, then they gave the blood back to the people. I mean, I've never heard of that being done before, have you?
Well, some of the reports that we see say that the red cells were pooled and then given back to different people. In other places where they'll do the plasma selling, yes, they will give the blood back to the, they'll centrifuge it person by person and give the red cells back to the person. That way the person can contribute can sell more often. But the story that circulated that in China the blood was pooled, I have serious doubts about that, because if that was done, you'd expect a lot of people to have anaphylactic shock and die almost immediately from getting mismatched blood returned.
And of course, but the big problem would be using the same material, using the same IV tubing and the needles over and over again without replacing them. Would that be how the disease was spread?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's what was done. And the thing that's so disturbing about this in China was that this wasn't the first time that we've had evidence of HIV transmission through plasma sales. It was recognized in Mexico in the mid 1980s. It was recognized, I believe, in India and Spain. There were smaller outbreaks reported. So we knew it was happening, and yet. Throughout the 1990s, all you heard from the international AIDS prevention programs is sex, 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 sex. And meanwhile, you've got this disaster going on in China where a million people are getting infected from plasma sales. And you just wonder, why. In 1995, the U.S. NIH actually funded research into what was happening. So clearly people at the top knew it was happening, but we didn't hear anything about it.
Yeah, well, I think the Chinese are very, very brilliant people. I mean, it seems incredible that they could be this naive. And yet, of course, we're looking at it. Once you get the epidemic established in a community with a million people, then, of course, it can begin to spread, take a life of its own.
Mm-hmm.
All right, fine. And of course, this is not the only precedent. I think you had mentioned that in Egypt, about 15% of the population has hepatitis C, simply because of the vaccination program there.
Yeah, that was a program for treating schistosomiasis in the '60s to '80s, when people were getting multiple intravenous injections, and it was very, efficient program where they were lined up and given injections one after the other, except that they just didn't sterilize the instruments.
All right, fine. Well, we're going to be back in just a few moments with Dr. David Gesquist, and we'll open up our lines at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. This is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295 if you have a question. And please just make it to a question. We don't want any long dissertations, but I think this is vitally important information that, of course, hit the medical community like a ton of potatoes. And, of course, they're shaking and they're saying it can't be true, and yet the scientific literature is certainly there to back it up. We'll be right back in just a moment.
Of a river. really help you to understand the nature of the spiritual battle in which we're currently involved is Gary Kaw's book, The Demonic Roots of Globalism. Now, you may remember Gary Kaw's book, En Route to Global Occupation. His second book, The Demonic Roots of Globalism, goes into the very real spiritual forces, the dark and sinister spiritual forces, which have energized those people who are molding the world in which we live today. Going into the background of Masonry, Theosophy, and he actually quotes extensively from the writings of these people who have helped to mold the events of the 20th century. The Demonic Roots of Globalism by Gary Kaw will give you tremendous insight into the background of what's happening in America today. And unless you understand the spiritual forces at work, you really can't understand the unfolding of events. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for The Demonic Roots of Globalism by Gary Kaw.
Well, Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and I want to mention that we carry the Big Berkey water filters. And, of course, the Big Berkey is an amazing water filter. It's been used for 150 years by missionaries throughout the world. It's made of stainless steel. It's attractive. You put 2 gallons of water in the top, and it comes out the bottom after having gone through by gravity ceramic filters that are actually packed with activated carbon. So the advantage to this is that you can use this over and over again. You can brush off the outside of the filters. You can actually take and boil them when they become too contaminated and get rid of the gases and other things that the activated carbon is absorbed. So this will last for a long period of time, which is why the missionaries love them. They are $239.95, and when you buy them through us, you get a 4-tape set or video we produce. If you'd like to see them, go to our website at radioliberty.com, and you can actually see pictures of the Big Berkey. That's radioliberty.com. Now, the Big Berkey is available in every state in the Union except for California and Iowa. However, there is a Berkey Light, which is exactly the same size. It's made out of Lexan, which is clear material we make bulletproof glass out of. So you can see the water levels, and that's why we got one. We like that. And then, of course, the filters are Black Berkey filters, and they do a much better job of filtering out the herbicides and pesticides and bacteria and everything else. And they'll even take TBE out. They won't take out fluoride. You need special filters to take out the fluoride with either the Big Berkey or the Berkey Light. The Berkey Light is $199.95, but you can, of course, get either the Big Berkey or the Berkey Light by calling us at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Well, Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and if you're out there in the listening audience and you have any questions at all, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. Dr. Gesequist, do you have a website or someplace where people could get your material?
We don't have a website yet. I can give my personal email
address,
and that's just David_Gesselquist, GISSELQUIST, at yahoo.com.
You can go up on the internet and you can type in Gesselquist, and you'll find all sorts of articles there and references to his work. And, of course, this is a fascinating source of information. You've written a number of articles. How many have you written at the present time on this subject?
Oh, well, I guess about a dozen major ones, but then also letters and other, you know, other things, book. We have a book that I've edited and so on. On these issues. So.
All right, fine. Of course, I believe that one day the medical profession is going to have to look and see what's going on and say, well, maybe that we've been wrong, that it is not primarily, or that at least not all, almost all sexually transmitted, because this would certainly save an awful lot of lives, wouldn't it, if simply investing the money in prevention would be far better than the massive amounts we're putting out for these AIDS medicines, which really don't work that well. I mean, they're going to prolong life a little bit, but, you know, everybody's still going to die, and you're going to take these medicines and going to have all sorts of problems with them. There's no magic pill for this disease. Wouldn't you say the prevention is far better than treating the end result?
Well, the prevention and doing it the right way is, by interrupting the healthcare transmission, identifying where it's going, is far better. The concept, the idea that we'll have a vaccine seems to be receding into the future. There's serious problems with that keep on coming up. So the way we can control it is by prevention. I think the treatment is going to be easier in the future as well as the new medicines come on and the costs come down. So I think that that one of the things that comes with the treatment that's good is that we end up with a lot more testing, and that in itself is going to open people's eyes as to what's happening. So I'm sort of in favor of do-it-yourself epidemiology, that people get tested and find out what their risks were and talk about it, and I think that'll be some of the best things we can do to get this epidemic stopped in Africa and Asia.
No, of course, now they have these wonderful tests, the OraSure, they have saliva tests, and then they have the rapid tests, and you get them done in 15 or 20 minutes instead of waiting days, and people come and get the test, and then they never come back for the results. So really we have the tools, but then we've had this saliva test. I can remember when I was first involved in this, certainly by 1990, that was almost 14 years ago. They had the saliva test, and we couldn't get that cleared, but now it's available, and so many of the other rapid tests are available. But if you're not testing, the majority of our people, you're never going to find the majority of the disease, either here or in Africa.
Well, that's one of the problems in Africa is that the donors have insisted or encouraged countries to put restrictions on who can get access to these testing kits. And so you can't get tested unless you're going to a government-approved clinic and you're given the counseling and so on. And those government-approved clinics simply aren't available in your community. And so you've got to go miles to get them and then maybe miles to go back and get the result one clinic might be covering 100 or 200 square miles. So it's the restrictions that have been put on these testing, access to testing kits have been obstructing it. If you could just allow the sale of these testing kits through pharmacies, they could be out there for less than $2 a piece now, I think.
Well, of course, this is what we found when we first got and started fighting this battle back in 1986. Every barrier was put in the way of doing what was logical to stop this deadly sexually transmitted disease. And every time we came up with a logical solutions, even when we could get all the doctors and the California Medical Association to support a logical approach to the epidemic, why we were blocked by the hierarchy of organized medicine or the public health officials. Now I know that in Colorado, you've actually worked with one of the doctors there and at least in Colorado, there was a little common sense. Here in California, why common sense and $20 to buy a cup of coffee? But in Colorado, they started doing what was logical early on, and they were able to do the testing and contact tracing, weren't they?
Yes. Yes, they were, and I understand that the policies have now shifted pretty much in the U.S. to the positions that you were pushing for so many years with frustration.
About 17 years ago, right?
Oh, wow!
But certainly, Africa is the area where we're talking about. Close to 20 million people in Africa, something like that. Do we have any idea?
The estimates were up to 29 million, but now they're doing some better random sampling of the populations, and the numbers are coming down now. I've seen a recent figure of 22 million.
All right. And now, is that worldwide or is that Africa?
That's Africa. Africa alone, yeah.
All right. Well, it's still one of the terrible tragedies because, probably, and I don't know, in Africa, they say 40 million people have died throughout the world, maybe 30 million in Africa where the epidemic has been centered, although now it's beginning to spread in Asia. In fact, people are talking about, in another 10 years, why the epicenter may actually move from Africa to Asia. I hope and pray they're wrong. Well, now, what can really be done to get this? Do you get a lot of help from the healthcare practitioners there in Africa who have to deal with these tragic victims?
We've got a lot of very positive response. I mean, although the information hasn't been on the news in the U.S., we've been on international TV through BBC, and papers have picked up this story all over Africa and Asia. So the word is out there, and the response that you can get back is universally favorable. I mean, people are concerned about the quality of their health care. They know that there's been an awful lot of unsterile health care. You hear repeated stories of people just being lined up, and somebody goes down the row with a syringe and injects one after the other. This is from years ago. Now it's not so bad in general, but you hear just these horror stories. One of my friends, for example, who's worked at WHO, talks about going into a market in Pakistan, where somebody gives injections, and he sticks the needle behind his ear, and a new patient comes up. It's an open air market. A new patient comes up. He takes the needle behind his ear. He takes some medicine to inject. He injects, and then he sticks the needle behind his ear again.
Well,
this was a year or two ago.
Well, it seems. At modern times that this sort of thing couldn't go on. The tragedy is it does, and many of these areas, they just don't have the awareness of the danger of spreading disease by needles. Now, certainly I'm well aware of what's going on because I read the CDC reports on a daily basis, but have you had much coverage here in the United States with your theories or been on any of the major television programs here?
Absolutely not. We haven't had cover. We've had a few isolated articles, I think, in Washington, the Washington Times, and I think Los Angeles Times, but the story just hasn't been picked up. We haven't seen anything yet. And one of the things that's peculiar about this is after raising this issue, the resistance that we're getting. It's like people are, so many of the HIV/AIDS experts in WHO and London School of Hygiene are really fighting so hard to ensure that Africans have access to unsafe health care.
Which really doesn't make sense, but this is, of course, the reality of what we're up against. So, we're just talking now. Really, the epidemic seems to be very, very sort of spotty, and you mentioned Sierra Leone, but certainly some places along the west coast of Africa there, they really don't have an awful lot of disease, do they?
Yeah, in general, the countries that were the French and Belgian run colonies had evidence of unsafe health care during the colonial times, in particularly high rates of hepatitis C in older people. Whereas the English run colonies didn't have a lot then. But in recent years, the former French and Belgian colonies have really had pretty low HIV, whereas the HIV has just taken off mostly in the former English colonies. So it's a peculiar pattern that seems to be explained more by political issues than it is by sexual behavior or anything else.
Well, and of course, really, this is such a tragedy, and this is a preventable disease. People don't have to get this disease, and we know that in Uganda, apparently, the incidence of the disease has really dropped. I've read, you probably know the figures better than I do, but from 20% to 30% down to maybe 5%, simply because they've stressed just abstinence and fidelity. Do you think that's as important as we've been led to believe?
Well, that's been part of it, yes. But another part of it was that around 1990, that there was in the late 80s and early 90s, the government and the public became very aware of risks in healthcare and really changed their behavior. In some hospitals in Uganda, you hear when people go into the hospital, their families come with them, and somebody brings a cooker and a pot, and they take whatever instruments were used on their mother or their daughter or whatever, and they sterilize them themselves at the foot of the bed. And they put them out for the nurses to use the next morning when they go around.
That's amazing. I've never heard that before.
But
of course, maybe that's a lot safer than simply going in and saying, do whatever you want to because I trust you. And tragically, you look at Botswana, a very, very advanced African nation. With lots of money, lots of prosperity, lots of mines, and a very high level of education. This is not a savage country at all as we think of it. And yet, of course, they have one of the highest incidences of HIV anywhere in Africa. And I think the only way to explain this would be what you're talking about. The more medical care you have available, the more HIV we have.
Well, there was one instance that was reported in the newspapers about a year ago in Botswana, where a nurse had gone to a school to vaccinate children and was using the same syringe to vaccinate multiple children. And the teachers came out and said, "You shouldn't be doing that. You shouldn't." And so she said, "Oh, I forgot. And so the nurse went back to vaccinating, but then when the nurse went back to vaccinating children with the same needle again, and the reports, I think, were over 100 children had been vaccinated with the repeat use of the same needle.
Well, now, of course, there was an instance in Libya where there were a large number of children that contracted the disease in a hospital referable to the healthcare practices. What was that story about?
Oh, that's still going on, and you people can see that in the news over the next weeks, I think. In 1998, hospitals started finding that a few children had HIV and negative mothers, and they told the word got around to some of the families, and the fathers actually confronted Gaddafi at a meeting, public meeting, and were with their concerns, and so with that attention, a major investigation was put in motion, and eventually, they found over 400 children with HIV from, a number of the children were sent to Rome, and some were sent to Geneva for tests. And so, these children were thoroughly tested. The virus was sequenced, and they found that it all came from one source. So that it means one infection had gone to 400 children within about a year and a half, maybe from 1997 until early 1999 or something. Initially, it became a political issue. Some foreign doctors, a doctor from Bulgaria and one from Jordan, I believe, and a number of nurses from Bulgaria were accused of conspiracy with deliberately infecting these children. And the conspiracy charges were dropped. Now the murder charges are still there, and these people are still in custody. And the case is getting close to resolution, I think, and who knows where it'll go, but this is what you might see in the newspaper soon.
But, of course, this was really related to, just improper healthcare procedures and using needles and syringes over and over. That's the only way you could do this, either that or using the same IV tubing over and over again.
Yeah, I think, as you say, I think it's using the same needles over and over and maybe multi-dose vials involved. The children also had, about half of them, I think, also were infected with hepatitis C. And there was a lot of hepatitis B as well.
And, of course, this is really one of the great tragedies. And as we were saying earlier, up to 300 million people contaminated with hepatitis B throughout the world, primarily because of medical procedures. So it almost makes you, I think here in the United States, why you do not expect anybody to reuse a needle or reuse a syringe. So from that point of view, we're fairly safe here. But that doesn't mean we don't certainly owe debt of responsibility to what's going on in the rest of the world.
Well, another story that might be, your readers, your listeners might be seeing in the near future is South Africa. Throughout Africa, there's been about 20 reports of as many as altogether about 300 children with HIV and negative mothers, and in South Africa in particular, in Cape Town, somebody's established a registry. Or near Cape Town, somebody's established a registry of children with HIV and negative mothers, and has currently, I believe, 14 children in the registry, where it seems to be from healthcare. And so far, there's been no investigation. But this report has just been published in a local journal, and reported in the newspaper. And I hear there's some public outcry over this, and they may be moving towards investigation finally, which I think is just a wonderful progress.
No, I think the only way that things are ever going to get done, you go up against the medical establishment, you're not going to get any place unless, of course, you've got the people hopping mad, and when the people are hopping mad realizing it may be their child that's going to get infected next, then you can begin to bring pressure to bear.
Yeah, well, absolutely. There's a lot of people who go to hospital.
Amen. There certainly are. Well, I want to thank you so very much for being with us. And, of course, this is the third program you've done with me, but I learn every time I'm with you. Do you have any parting thought for our listeners today?
Well, I don't know. I just appreciate talking with you about this. And if anyone wants to contribute some anecdote that they know or knows people has contact with missionaries that would be willing to take up some of this issue, I'd like to make some more contacts.
All right, fine. And, of course, then they can reach you again at David, underline, that's a hyphen, but it's underneath a bottom hyphen, Gisselquist at yahoo.org.
I think it's yahoo.com, isn't it?
Yahoo. Well, you know that better than I
do. I believe so.
All right. God bless you. Thank you so very much for being here. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, fine, ladies and gentlemen. I hope you've enjoyed the program. Dr. David Gisselquist is a much sought-after medical author and authority. And when you were, of course, allowed to present before the Royal Society over in London and groups of doctors internationally, why, you know that he's a man who is respected in his field. The only problem is you're not hearing about it in most of our major media, and you have to ask yourself why. Why have we never really tried to stop this terrible, terrible disease? We'll be back here in just a moment at Radio Liberty.
Have you ever wondered what the Vietnamese War was really all about? Why America, the most powerful nation in the world, spent 10 years fighting in Southeast Asia against a nation the size of the state of Mississippi, and America lost that war? Do you really believe that happened by accident? There's so much to the story of Vietnam that the American people have never really known. And in our four-tape set, Vietnam, the Untold Story, you're going to get the information that you need to understand the tragedy of that event. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and ask for Vietnam, the Untold Story, the story of what really happened in Vietnam that has been suppressed from the American people for the last 20 years.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and let me suggest that if you've not read my book, AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic, you should get it and read it. It's the classic book on the politics of AIDS. And, of course, it was written, about 12 years ago. But it still is apropos today. It's the story of my odyssey, beginning back in, I believe, 1986, to try to bring some logic, some sanity to the handling of this deadly disease. Doctors know how to stop this epidemic. The doctors in the California Medical Association, which I belonged to at that time, I was the senior delegate from Santa Cruz County to the House of Delegates, the doctors knew what needed to be done, but at every turn they were blocked. And after a decade, when we finally had an overwhelming vote of support and a standing ovation from the California Medical Association, when they accepted an effective public health policy, that policy was blocked. This is happening all throughout the world. Why would that happen? Well, maybe you need to get my book, AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic, and then you need to get my four-tape set on population control. And, of course, my video on population control, my four-tape set on population control, and the Population Control Agenda monograph. And if you order either the book or the four-tape set, I should say the video or the four-tape set, and ask for the monograph, we'll be glad to send it free of charge. Or go to our website at radioliberty.com, and you can pull it down there, or you can get it in our Sustainable Development syllabus. But you need to understand there really are people who want to kill off most of the world's population. And if you doubt that, give us a call at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Ask for the UNESCO Courier, November 1991. Just ask for Jacques Cousteau. And in that he says, we've got to eliminate 350,000 people a day. Could that really be true? And Dan Rather and Rush Limbaugh haven't told us? Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course, this is the time we have to remind you that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we do hope that many of you out there will want to join in this epic struggle that we're involved in, trying to educate the American people about the spiritual battle in which we're involved. Because you can't understand what we've been talking about today as this epidemic is being allowed to spread throughout the world unless you understand that there really are evil and wicked people out there who have no human compassion. In Hitler's Germany, they would have worked in the concentration camps. In America, they would have worked for the CIA in their mind control experiments and the other crass experiments they carried out on helpless and unsuspecting Americans. And if you doubt that, you need to get, of course, the Rockefeller Committee report put out by the Veterans Administration over the name of Jay Rockefeller that just simply lists many of the horrible experiments carried out on both American soldiers without their consent and American civilians without their knowledge or consent, and they're still doing it today. But of course, most people, since it doesn't seem to bother them, are totally unaware. If you'd like to get the Rockefeller Committee report, it's available from Radio Liberty by calling 1-800-544-8927. Our book, AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic. Our video, Population Control. Our video, our four-tape set on population control, and our monograph, The Population Control Agenda, are all there. Of course, we have a four-tape set on genocide, a four-tape set on why do we still have cancer, a four-tape set and transcript, The New Order of the Barbarians, going into a talk that was given by Dr. Richard Day in 1969, where he talked about, he was the medical director of Planned Parenthood, of course. He was on the inside of what he referred to as the order that ruled America. And the plan was already in place, and nobody seemed to care. And it was to destroy most of the world's population, because there were too many people in the world, and they had to die of something. We'd create new diseases. An incredible four-tape set, and of course, so many other much.
This is the